HD Smartcast.
You're listening to a Hindustan Times production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Welcome to A View from the Stands, a podcast series in which we discuss the new normal in the world of sports. I'm Aditya Iyer, and with me is the National Sports Editor of HD, Rudraneel Sengupta.
The question is a simple enough one, but the answer isn't as easy as choosing between yes and no. Which is why we, my co-host Rudra and I, are here to discuss whether we're witnessing the formation of the greatest Indian Test squad of all time. Note, I did not say greatest Indian Test team, but rather greatest Indian Test squad. Because as far as reserve strength goes, there perhaps has never been an Indian team quite like the one we have seen in action in 2021. First in Australia and now against England in India. So, welcome to a new episode of A View from the Stands. And once again, I did have one. A view from the stand, that is, to watch some cricket here in Motera, where we are currently recording this podcast. So, Rudra, I'm sorry if that opening question caught you by surprise, but I do think it needs some exploring. So, let me turn to you for your thoughts as usual.
Okay, firstly, I don't know if there is such a thing as, maybe the Japanese have a word for it, as fatigue towards excitement and adrenaline. And just like seeing, you know, amazing things happen over and over again. Is there such a word for it? Like, you know, because I'm feeling it. I'm like not again. Akshar Patel takes another 5-wicket haul. I'm like, oh my God. I don't know what to say about, we touched on this topic the last time we were talking on a podcast about this incredible depth and reserve that the Indian team has, and truly it is incredible, and we have seen it time and time again in any kind of situation at home and abroad, on fast tracks, on spinning tracks, on flat batting tracks. It doesn't matter what kind of condition, what kind of stadium you're in, whether you're home, whether you're in Australia, who your opponent is, what their bowling strengths are. It just does not seem to matter to the the quote unquote Indian juggernaut, because what kind of players are available, it seems like your entire first 11 could be out and with injuries or whatnot, and you have a second string 11 out there who will win you a test match, you know, against the best sides in the world. So wow, I mean, what's happening? I don't know what's happening, because It seems to me like a lot of these guys have like learned to play their test cricket while playing T20, which is another really weird thing. I mean, we are so used to constantly criticizing the shortest format of the game for introducing, for taking away from the skills that are needed for the longest format of the game, the patience, the grit, the ability to, hunker down and refrain from using your instincts taking over, discipline. Test matches, obviously, whether you're bowling or batting, need actually a wider range of skills just because it is played over 5 days. And yet it seems like it doesn't matter that a lot of our people, Mohammad Siraj, for example, Washington Sundar is another example, and even Jasprit Bumrah, who's now, the best fast bowler in the world. He's been a veteran in his four or five-year-old test career. He's already
shorter than
he's
that.
Up there. Yeah, shorter than that, and he's already a veteran. But we forget that 3 years, and we forget that he also came the same route. He was kind of, I know that once in an interview, he told me that that's not entirely true, because he played quite a lot of first-class cricket while he was playing T20s. But the fact is that he played more T20s than he played first-class cricket.
Yes.
He was recognized first for his T20 skills. And he trained more with the Mumbai Indians setup than I think he did with the Gujarat setup. And then from there, he emerged almost a complete test bowler, which is exactly what I'm seeing with Mohammad Siraj right now. I think he's a complete test bowler. He knows how to use conditions. He's got all the skills. He knows how to let the ball, control the ball and do what he wants the ball to do. He knows exactly the strategies and tactics needed to handle different kinds of conditions and take wickets in those conditions. What a beautiful cricketing mind. And I wonder whether, what happens to this wonderful pace attack right now with Mohammad Siraj in it. I don't think Umesh Yadav is going to get too many chances after these performances. But yes, I mean, incredible. And Akshar Patel as well. I mean, where do you, how do you, you know, put this guy outside the team and let somebody else in?
Absolutely.
Or Washington Sundar, who scored like 3 half-centuries now in 6 innings, almost got to a century and got stranded. Just incredible stuff.
Yeah,
so I don't have an explanation, but I'm tired of being excited.
Yeah. A lot of valid points that you've raised there, but I like the one that you brought up right in the beginning and now right at the end, which is, you know, this fatigue of brilliance, because that's often an amazing trait, because it's a trait of a great era, right? Like we've felt this same fatigue, boredom, if we put it casually, when, you know, Tiger Woods was doing his thing, or Michael Schumacher was doing his thing, or when Lewis Hamilton is doing his thing now. You know, and to some levels, this is applicable to the Federer era before the Nadals and the Djokovic's showed up and started challenging him as well, right? Because, I mean, there was no boredom after that.
Absolutely.
But like when it was a singular Federer era, it was a very, very similar scene where people were actually cribbing and crying, saying, what is this? Like, we know what's going to happen now. Right?
No, hold on. We are still cribbing and crying. Now we are bored of the big three.
Of the big three. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. So it's just, okay, yeah. So closer home then. Forget about Federer then. A lot of people felt this with the Australian team of the very late 90s and you know, the entire duration of the 2000s, where a lot of teams would compete, but you know Australia is going to win the big tournament at the end, right? Like, or a test series or whatever. So that's starting to happen with India now, which takes me to my next point beautifully, which is it's happening to India even while we find ourselves in gnarly situations, if not difficult ones, like the one in the fourth test, which is why we're recording this podcast, because India has won this series. And for a while, after England finished off their first innings on 205, you know, not the greatest score, but India was in a lot of trouble as well. We were 80 for 4 when Rahane got out just before lunch on day 2. And this is when... did I mention that we were 80 for 4? I think I did.
Yes.
So we were 80 for 4, 125 runs adrift of England's first innings total on a sticky pitch, on a pitch that wasn't easy to play on. It wasn't spinning like crazy, like with the third test, which was the day-nighter here in Motera. But it was bouncing more. So, you know, it was a bit weird because, like, the ball was kind of like gripping on the surface and making life a little difficult for these guys.
I remember Rahane talking and it was caught on stump mic talking to I forget who, Rohit Sharma, I think, and he was saying that, and he kept saying, is the ball like stopping and not coming onto the bat, you know?
Right.
So he was saying that in Marathi, and they had a discussion about it. So yeah, that's a good point about the pitch.
Correct. And it needed, you again, you know, I'm glad you brought Rohit in, because it kind of needed the dedication that he was showing in his craft, you know, you're letting balls go outside the off stump, letting it go on bounce, like really grinding it out in the middle, you know, like very unnatural, the kind of innings that you don't usually see from Rohit. And then Rahane came out and, you know, was hitting his way out of trouble and he was looking really assured. And then he got out and it was 80 for 4 with Rohit at one end. And a very young Rishabh Pant, who hasn't played too much in India, walking into bat at the other end. And it was not as easy as it seemed. I mean, you had Kohli getting out for his second duck in the series. So that was the difficulty level of the pitch. And yet, we ended up getting, what, like a 130-run lead? 160-run lead, I'm sorry, excuse me.
Yeah.
So what is this? I mean, like, it's crazy. We end up like digging like holes for ourselves, almost, you know, to test what could possibly happen from there and who's going to rescue us this time. And this time it was the lower order in Rishabh and Akshar and Washington Sundar, who was, you know, stranded on 96. But what an incredible batting lineup. It's almost like we have two top order batting lineups just like placed one below another.
Absolutely. And it brings us, circles us back to that point you made about the greatest test team versus the greatest test squad.
Squad,
because over the last 10 or so test matches that India has played, and through which we have, like, as sports fans, gone through possibly every emotion accessible to sports fans. And we've been left run dry. The thing is that India's top batsman in test matches. And the moment I say that, I know that you're thinking Cheteshwar Pujara, Virat Kohli and Ajinkya Rahane, because these three have been, you know, like the giants of India's test side over the last few years. Absolutely. These three have all failed. They have hit what I think is, for all of them, if maybe not all of them, but close enough, their career lowest averages ever over the last 10 tests. Over the last 10 tests in over two series.
All right. So you're counting Australia too.
Yeah, I'm counting Australia too. I'm counting New Zealand as well before that. Over that entire period, these guys have not been able to, except for one innings there, one innings here, they have not been able to sustain their, in fact, they have gone quite cheaply. And in spite of that, and despite of that, India has won everything. They have put up huge scores. They have, you know, dug themselves out of the most difficult situations possible. So yes, you know, it's the talent is just everywhere, and it seems like they know how to just get up onto the big stage and do what they have to do.
Yeah, and a quick nod to India's first-class cricket system, because a lot of what you said right now, and when you were first talking about this team at the beginning of the episode, it all kind of boils down to the fact that we're producing fully prepared, you know, cricketers by the time they come to the test level. How, it doesn't matter what their age is. You could be Akshar Patel, who I'm assuming is in his late 20s now. I'm sorry, I don't have his exact age in front of me. But he's been around for a long time. 29? Yeah. Okay, so an almost 30-year-old guy versus, say, someone like, you know, Rishabh Pant, right? Like, Washington Sundar is an anomaly. I would have taken his name otherwise, but he hasn't played first-class cricket for 2 years. So let's talk about people who have. So I think Pant at one end of the spectrum and Akshar at the other end. By the time they show up and play test cricket and they're given that chance, they know exactly what to do, because the level of our first-class game is so high and the grind is so thorough that these guys, like, they know, they do not need the captain to come and put an arm around their shoulder and say, you know what, like, the game is slightly different at the test level and this is what you have to do. None of that. Right. Just toss the ball at that person or send him out to bat and he knows exactly what's going on. Ashwin referred to this as well when, you know, a lot of us were constantly asking him about Akshar in the tests gone by. And he kept saying this. He kept saying, there is a system in place and that is why this is happening over and over again.
Of course.
Fortunately, we didn't get to see it with Nadeem this time around. But, like, you know, we also have to realize now, he got the most batting-friendly pitch of the series. I have a feeling he might have done almost as well as Akshar, if not as well. Okay, I don't think he'd have done as well as Akshar, but, like, close enough, right? Maybe he wouldn't have gotten 27 wickets in 3 matches, which is just phenomenal. He'd have got, say, 20, right? But that's the depth in our first class system. So of course, when it kind of, like, fizzles to the top, you're going to see that depth in our squad there as well.
So maybe what I think is happening is that there is the depth in the first class system, the grind that they have to go through playing Ranji has that's one part of the story. I think the other part of the story is that they learn how to handle pressure. They learn how to handle, you know, cricket played with, you know, the global stars of the game. Yeah, and certain skills that come with it from the IPL. So you've got both these things working on these players.
Absolutely.
So on the one hand, there's the grind. On the other hand, there's that exposure. There's that little bit of exposure, not only to the pressures of the IPL, but also to the skills that all these, you know, global players bring with them.
On that point, I have a question for you then.
Yes.
How palpable is that T20 influence in our test cricket right now? I mean, what would your answer be to that?
So, you know, it is actually, in some ways, it is palpable, but it depends on the person and how they transfer that skill, in the sense that, you know, Akshar has been
consistently talking about the fact that the way, you know, the in the third test, for example, the way he bowled and he picked up all those wickets using that arm ball is something that he actually learned in T20 cricket. When you know, he went against the grain of the old line of thinking, which is that, you know, spinners should toss the ball up,
yep,
get hit, you know, not be afraid to get hit. And at some point or the other, you know, the batsmen are going to hole out to them, right? That was the original line of thinking from, let's say, the school of thinking from which Chahal comes from. He's never scared to toss the ball up, to attack, get hit all over the park, and then pick up his wickets. But Akshar was taught a little differently. He was taught how to actually stem the flow of runs as well and create some kind of tension there, you know, and then you know, bowl that, use that arm ball, the non-spinning ball, the ball that skids and goes straight to get his batsman. And it is something that he used in the test match. Adapted it for test conditions, you know, and that takes a lot of skill, actually, where, you know, because in T20s, you're obviously bowling only four overs if you get your full quota. It's much easier to be consistent with a certain line or length or strategy over four overs than it is to do it over 20, 25 overs through a test match. And that's the, I think that's the key thing that these guys have all learned how to do, is to take that little skill that they use in little bursts and, you know, fits and bursts in T20 cricket and use it consistently over the longer duration of a test match. And I think we saw Rishabh Pant doing it as well. You know, excellent, when he needed to, he put his anchor down, he defended it, he kind of survived that period, which is not his most natural thing. And then he opened up and he played what could be a T20 innings or an ODI innings, you know,
closer
to a white ball innings.
Closer to second new ball. But before that, it was you know, the kind of punt innings that you can only dream of watching, because, you know, he usually cuts loose quite quickly. This time, he just refused to.
Yes. And I think that's a lot to do with the psychological assurance that these players have. That, okay, you gotta do something. If you fail, you fail. I'm sure this is what the message is. That if you fail, you fail. That's all right. But, you know, do what you think you need to do when you're out there. And I think that giving players that confidence of going out and doing what they feel like doing at that moment, that has really worked.
Right. So now I'm going to begin wrapping up this episode by asking you two questions, right? And they're going to be really easy ones. Easy in the sense that they're going to be one-word answers, right? I know in the beginning of the episode, I said that the answer isn't as easy as choosing between yes and no, but that's precisely what we're going to do now. So my two questions to you, and I will give you my answers before throwing it to you and wrapping this up, is, I'm going to repeat myself, are we witnessing the formation of the greatest Indian test squad of all time? And in the four test matches that you witnessed here against England and India, which was the test match that stood out for you? I'm not even asking why. So let me start by saying, yes, we are witnessing the formation of the greatest Indian test squad, at least of our lifetimes. I don't think there were, you know, larger pools before we were born in any case. So the answer is yes. And for me, it was the second Chennai test that stood out. Your turn, Rudra, and you can wrap it up with that.
Okay, so for me, again, the answer to the first question is yes, of course we are.
Right.
And I think that we are going to, like, you know, win the World Test Championship, and I think it's going to be a superb match. Because I think New Zealand are really, at the moment, the worthiest opponents that you can think of in Test cricket right now. The team that comes closest to India's level of skill, grit, and variety on offer, you know, like you've got like an exceptional batsman in Kane Williamson, a brilliant fast bowling attack, players who can do little bits of many different things, and they have the freedom to do it. A wonderful team. I've always loved New Zealand, and I would love to
see Neil Wagner shaping the ball away from Rohit and Virat. Just make amazing. I mean, it'll be beautiful.
So there you go. So New Zealand, amazing team. India, an amazing team. So it's going to be something, this final.
That should be great.
And the answer to the second question is the last test in Ahmedabad. Not because it was quite inevitable that England were going to lose. So it wasn't much of a contest, I think. But just because of the, you know, that innings that Pant played, the innings that Washington Sundar played, were both like joys to watch for me, as well as, you know, watching Ashwin and Akshar with the ball and even Mohammad Siraj with the ball. I thought it had everything that has excited me through this last, few test matches, Australia and here. I think all of it was kind of emblematic of that time in that one test in Ahmedabad. It was great. But I have to ask you one question before we wrap up, because you were there, which is, do you think that England were the opponents in this series, or were they a team that just, did not have the fight in them?
Yeah, man. So that's a slightly hard one to answer, because I don't think they had the fight in them, because a lot of these pitches weren't as bad as they made them out to be. Again, emblematic in the fact that Ashwin at number 8 hit that 100 in the second test, and Washington Sundar at number 8 nearly hit that 100 in the final test, standard on 96. These are the same pitches in which they imploded, as in England. You had Akshar Patel walking in at number 9 and having a 100 run stand with Sundar nearly getting a 50 himself, had he not run himself out, which in turn stranded Sundar. You know, we have seen a lot more runs at the back end of that innings, and it was the only innings that India played. They did not have the fight in them. Before Johnny Bairstow walked out to bat, I saw people taking bets in the number of balls he was going to last. And we're talking about England's number 3. Right? Like, this guy is not a middle order batsman. He's walking in immediately after one of the openers fall. And he got out first ball to leave Ashwin on a hat trick this time around. It was his sixth duck against India in the last 6 matches against India, and 3 of them in England. So, like, I don't know, man. I mean, like, also, I know I'm rambling on, but I want to wrap this up right now. Bairstow came in this touring squad with England to Sri Lanka, kind of got his eye in, started playing on spinning wickets. And then they sent him back because of the rotation policy. So, like, he's figured out the conditions a little bit. And then they're like, now go back to like really cold, snowy England, and then come back again for the third test in India. It's just there's something completely, like, clinically off with what England was doing around here. I mean, it obviously stems right from the top, from their selection system, from what the way perhaps their selection committee is running things. But yeah, okay. In short, and I know it's always a fun thing to say in short after you've rambled on for like a very long time. In short, yes, they didn't have the fight in them at all.
All right. I'll let you go, but there's one more question, and then you don't have to ramble about this one, but you can just, a short answer will do. But since you watched these test matches actually live there, do you have one thrilling moment that thrilled you beyond anything else that happened?
Yeah, I mean, that one shot that Pant played off Jimmy Anderson, where he reverse slapped him, and then just for the expression on Anderson's face, the smile on Pant's, the audacity of that stroke, the look on all the fielders around, Pant's, the closing guys, had slipped, like Ben Stokes, like scratching his chin and almost chuckling to himself. Yeah, I mean, that was a genius moment. Like, as I think it was Harsha Bogle who said at the presentation, that moment will kind of like stay with him long after, this series is forgotten and all of that. And I have a feeling it's going to stay with me too.
Yeah, superb. Okay. Yeah. Now we can wrap.
All right. So bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Rudra and I right through the course of not just this test series, but the previous one also. The fact that you guys tune in means a lot to us. And we will be back very, very soon, hopefully with cricket at least half as exciting as what we've witnessed over the last 3 months, because they've been crazy. So thank you very much, and catch you next time around.
This was an episode of A View from the Stands. Do like and follow us on @HTSmartcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or write to us on podcasts@hindustantimes.com. You can listen to more podcasts by logging on to htsmartcast.com.
This was a Hindustan Times production, brought to you by HT Smartcast. HD Smartcast.